If the sun, that morning, had not been burning so warmly in the brassy sky of Figurinodon 2, Bill might have paid more attention to his plowing and would have driven his furrow to the far side of the hill before the seductive music sounded along the road. He might never have heard it, and his life would have been very, very different. But he did hear it, and dropped the handle of the plow that was plugged into the robo-mule, turned, and gaped. It was indeed a fabulous sight. Leading the parade was a one-robot band, 12 feet high and splendid in its great black busby that concealed the hi-fi speakers. Martial music poured out in wave after inspiring wave, and even Bill's thick peasant feet stirred in their clodhoppers as the shining boots of the squad of soldiers crashed along the road in perfect unison, while to their rear marched the sergeant, gorgeous in his braid and brass. Then the little legion was passed, and Bill climbed clumsily over the split rail fence and ran after them. There were no more than two interesting events every 4 years here, and he was not going to miss what promised to be a third. A crowd had already gathered in the market square when Bill hurried up. A tri-dye screen and refreshment booth had been set up, and the recruiting sergeant stood beaming a welcoming smile.
Now hear this! Three drinks for all, courtesy of the Emperor, and some lively scenes of jolly adventure in distant climes to amuse you while you sip.
The cooling drinks were shared out by a robot, and Bill sipped his happily, while he followed the enthralling adventures of the space troopers in full color with sound effects and stimulating subsonics. There was battle and death and glory, though it was only the enemy, the Chingers, who died. Troopers only suffered neat little wounds in their extremities that could be covered easily by small bandages. And while Bill was enjoying this, recruiting Sergeant Bruce was enjoying him.
This is the one,
he chortled to himself. He could already feel the weight of the bonus money in his pocket. As the last chord died and the screen went blank, Bill was plucked from the audience by a powerful arm.
You're a fine figure of a lad, said the sergeant. Did you ever think of making your career in the forces?
I'm not the military type, Bill said. My fondest ambition is to be a technical fertilizer operator.
That's no job for a bright lad like you, the sergeant said. Try a uniform on, Taylor!
When Bill opened his mouth to protest, the sergeant put a large cigar into it, and before he could get it out, the robot Taylor had rolled up, swept a curtain-bearing arm about him, and stripped him naked.
Hey! Hey!
He said. Then,
ouch!
As the tailor extruded a cold pointer and jabbed him with it, measuring his size. Something went tonk deep inside its tubular torso, and a brilliant red jacket began to emerge from a slot in the front. In an instant, this was slipped onto Bill, and the shining gold buttons buttoned. Luxurious gray moleskin trousers were pulled on next, then gleaming black knee-length boots.
Well, I just couldn't, said Bill. Thank you anyway for the offer, but...
The sergeant smiled, prepared even for this 11th-hour resistance, and pressed the button on his belt that actuated the programmed hypno-coil in the heel of Bill's new boot. The powerful neural current surged through the contacts. Bill's hand twitched and jumped, and when the momentary fog had lifted from his eyes, he saw that he had signed his name on the form that the recruiting sergeant held before him.
But...
Welcome to the space troopers, the sergeant boomed. Fall in!
What have they done to my son?
Bill's mother screeched, coming into the market square, clutching at her bosom with one hand and towing his baby brother, Charlie, with the other.
Your son is now a trooper for the greater glory of the Emperor, the sergeant said. Attention!
With a clash of heels, the graceless recruits braced their shoulders and lifted their chins. Much to his surprise, so did Bill.
Forward march!
They moved in perfect rhythm as the command robot replayed the order to the hypno-coil in every boot. Bill's mother vanished behind him, and one last anguished wail cut through the thud of marching.
I'm here to break yours! Spirit!
A voice, rich with menace, told the recruits. And they looked up and shivered as they faced the chief demon of the training camp, Petty Chief Officer Deathwish Drang. He began to pace grimly before the row of terrified recruits, then stopped before Bill, who was not shaking quite as much as the others, and scowled.
I don't like your face. 1 month of Sunday pack drill.
But, sir...
And a second month for talking back!
He waited, but Bill was silent. He had already learned his first lesson on how to be a good trooper. Keep your mouth shut. Deathwish paced on.
We will run to breakfast now, as soon as I have some volunteers for an easy assignment. Can any of you drive a helicar?
Two recruits hopefully raised their hands, and he beckoned them forward.
All right, both of you. Mops and buckets behind that door. Clean out the latrine while the rest are eating. You'll have a better appetite for lunch.
That was Bill's second lesson on how to be a good trooper. Never volunteer. The days of recruit training passed with a horribly lethargic speed. With each day, conditions became worse and Bill's exhaustion greater. On the third Sunday of their imprisonment, he was finally permitted to rest after 14 hours of drill. His legs vibrated with exhaustion as he dropped his jacket to the floor and dragged his shaver from his footlocker. In the washroom, he bobbed his head around, trying to find a clear space in one of the mirrors. All of them had been heavily stenciled in large letters with such inspiring messages as, "Keep your wug shut, the chingers are listening," and, "If you talk, this man may die." He finally plugged the shaver in next to, "Would you want your sister to marry one?" and centered his face in the O in one. It took more than a minute for the meaning of the question to penetrate his fatigue-drugged brain.
"I haven't got a sister,"
he grumbled feverishly.
"And if I did, why should she want to marry a lizard anyway?"
It was a rhetorical question, but it brought an answer from the far end of the room.
"It doesn't mean exactly what it says. It's just there to make us hate the dirty enemy more."
Bill jumped. He had thought he was alone. Eager Beager was so much a part of the washroom that you forgot he was there. A moon-faced, eternally smiling youth who had to be mad because he was always eager to help his buddies and had volunteered as permanent washroom orderly. Not only that, but he liked to polish boots for every man in the squad every night.
"Well, if that's what they want to say, why don't they just say, hate the dirty enemy more?"
Bill complained. He jerked his thumb at the far wall where there was a poster labeled, "Know the Enemy." It featured a life-size illustration of a chinger, a 7-foot-high saurian that looked very much like a scale-covered, four-armed green kangaroo with an alligator's head.
"Whose sister would want to marry a thing like that, anyway? And what would a thing like that want to do with a sister, except maybe eat her?"
"Well, you see, gee, it doesn't mean a real sister. It's just part of psychological warfare."
Bill unplugged his razor.
"It still doesn't seem to make sense."
He pointed to the sign above the urinal that read, "Button flies, beware spies."
"How could a chinger possibly be a spy? What kind of makeup would disguise a 7-foot lizard as a recruit? Well, you couldn't even disguise one to look like Deathwish Drang, though you could get pretty close."
The lights went out, and as though using his name had summoned him like a devil from the pit, the voice of Deathwish blasted through the barracks.
"Pack your bags!"
he rasped.
"A glorious space battle has just been fought to its victorious conclusion, and there are over 4 million casualties. Replacements are needed. You're shipping out, while I remain here in peaceful security to train your replacements."
The delivery tube plunked at his elbow, and as he opened the message capsule and read its contents, his smile slowly fell to pieces.
"They're shipping me out.
He said hollowly. Up and up the shuttle ship shot towards the great fleet of deep spacers that darkened the stars above. A new fleet, the most powerful the galaxy had ever seen. So new, in fact, that the ships were still under construction. Welding torches flared in brilliant points of light, while hot rivets hurled their flat trajectories across the sky into the waiting buckets. The spots of light died away as one behemoth of the star lanes was completed, and thin screams sounded in the spacesuit radio circuit as the workers, instead of being returned to the yards, were pressed into service on the ship they had so recently built. This was total war. Bill staggered through the sagging plastic tube that connected the shuttle ship to a dreadnought of space and dropped his bags in front of a petty chief officer. The petty looked up.
Name?
Bill. Spelled with two L's.
Bill, the petty mumbled. B-I-L. Two L's for officers only, Bob. Learn your place. You are now a fuse tender, sixth class, unskilled. Bunk down in compartment 34J89T001. Move.
No sooner had Bill found his quarters and thrown his bags into a bunk next to Eager Beager's than a dull buzzing sounded, grumbling through the air like a stifled erectation.
There's the chow call,
Eager said. Other troopers were going by in the corridor, and they followed them into the bowels of the ship and joined a line leading to a door labeled Consolidated Mess Number 2. Inside of it, a cook in soap-stained, greasy fatigues handed Bill a yellow plastic cup from a rack before him. Something went
beep,
and a thin stream of yellow fluid gushed out of a spout, filling the cup halfway.
What is this?
Bill asked, peering into the cup.
What is this? What is this?
The cook raged, growing bright red.
This is your dinner, you stupid Bob! This is absolutely chemically pure water in which are dissolved 18 amino acids, 16 vitamins, 11 mineral salts, a fatty acid ester, and glucose. What else did you expect?
Dinner?
Bill said hopefully, then saw red as the soup ladle crashed down on his head.
Well, could I have it without the fatty acid ester?
He asked hopefully, but he was pushed out into the corridor where Eager joined him. They walked slowly back to their quarters.
I wonder what's in there,
Bill said, pointing to a door with a large sign that read, Admittance to Authorized Personnel Only.
Gee, I don't know. Maybe food.
They slipped through instantly and closed the door behind them, but there was no food there. Instead, they were in a long chamber with meters, dials, and controls. Bill bent over and read the label on the nearest one.
Mark 4 Atomic Blaster. And look at the size of them. This must be the ship's main battery.
He turned around and saw that Eager was holding his arm up so that his wristwatch pointed at the guns and was pressing on the crown with the index finger of his other hand.
What are you doing?
Bill asked.
Just seeing what time it was.
How can you tell what time it is when you have the inside of your wrist towards your face and the watch is on the outside?
Footsteps echoed far down the long gun deck, and they remembered the sign on the outside of the door. In an instant, they had slipped back through it, and Bill pressed it quietly shut. When he turned around, Eager Beager had gone, so that he had to make his way back to their quarters by himself. Eager had returned first, and was busy shining boots for his buddies, and didn't look up when Bill came in. But what had he been doing with his watch? This question kept bugging Bill all the time during the days of their training as they painfully learned the drill of fuse tending. He worried whenever he had the time to do it and finally decided he needed help. In the ship's directory, the chaplain was listed as being in compartment 362B on the 89th deck. Bill finally found this and snapped to attention when he saw the officer behind the single desk that almost filled the tiny room. A sign on the desk read, Laundry Officer.
Excuse me, sir, he said, but I'm in the wrong office. I was looking for the chaplain.
This is the chaplain's office.
The officer reached out a finger and flipped the sign on his desk over. It read, Chaplain, on the other side. Then there was a slight whirring sound as his collar rotated until it was on backwards, showing white and smooth to the front. The chaplain steepled his fingers before him, lowered his eyes, and smiled sweetly.
How may I help you, my son?
I thought you were the laundry officer.
I am, my son, but that is just one of the burdens that must fall upon my shoulders. There is little call for a chaplain in these troubled times, but much call for a laundry officer. I do my best to serve.
He bent his head humbly.
But I see you are troubled. You must tell me your problem, and do not fear. What I shall hear shall never leave this room, for I am bound to secrecy by the oath of my calling. Unburden yourself.
Well, I'm worried about one of my buddies. I think he's a Chinner spy.
The chaplain nodded, smiling.
How could he be a spy? To be a spy, he would have to be a chinger. And chingers are 7 feet tall with tails.
Yeah, Bill mumbled unhappily. But it still doesn't explain everything.
It satisfies me, and it must satisfy you. I feel that Satan Man has possessed you to make you think evil of your comrade, and you had better do some penance and join me in a quick prayer before the laundry officer come back on duty.
The ritual was quickly finished, and Bill turned to leave.
Just one moment, my son,
the chaplain said with his warmest smile, reaching back over his shoulder to grab the end of his necktie. He pulled, and his collar whirred about, and as it did, the blissful expression was wiped from his face to be replaced by a surly snarl.
Just where do you think you're going, Bob? Get back in that chair.
But,
Bill stammered.
You said I was dismissed.
That's what the chaplain said, and as laundry officer, I have no truck with him. Now, fast, what's the name of this chinger spy you're hiding?
But I told you about that under oath.
You told the chaplain about it, and he keeps his word, and he didn't tell me. I just happened to hear.
He pressed a red button on the control panel.
The MPs are on their way. Now, the name.
Eager Beager,
Bill sobbed, as heavy feet trampled outside and two red hats forced their way into the tiny room.
I have a spy for you boys,
the laundry officer announced triumphantly, and the MPs grated their teeth, howled deep in their throats, and launched themselves through the air at Bill.
Not him,
the officer gasped.
This is our informant. Let's go.
They marched to the fuse tender's quarters, where the laundry officer opened the door just enough to poke in his head.
Hi, gang,
he called cheerily.
Is Eager Beager here?
Eager looked up from the boot he was polishing, waving and grinning.
That's me, Key!
Get him!
The laundry officer expostulated, and both MPs raised their clubs to give him a sound battering. At this moment, the top of Eager Beager's head flew open. Happening at any other time, this would have been considered unusual, but happening at this moment, it was spectacularly unusual, and they all, including Bill, gaped as a 7-inch-high lizard climbed out of the open skull and jumped to the floor, in which it made a sizable dent upon landing. It had 4 tiny arms, a long tail, a head like a baby alligator, and was bright green. It looked exactly like a chinger, except that it was 7 inches tall instead of 7 feet.
Chingers forever!
It said in a thin imitation of Eager Beager's voice and charged across the compartment towards Beager's bunk. Bill bent over to grab the tiny creature, but small and powerful talons locked into his flesh, and he was pulled from his feet and went sailing through the air to crash against the bulkhead.
Gee, that's for you, you stooie!
The minuscule voice squeaked. Before anyone else could interfere, the lizardoid ran to Beaker's pile of barracks bags, tore the topmost one open, and dived inside. A high-pitched humming blew in volume an instant later, and from the bag emerged the bullet-like nose of a shining projectile. It pushed out until a tiny spaceship, not 2 feet long, floated in the compartment. The humming rose in pitch, and the ship suddenly shot forward and tore through the metal bulkhead after bulkhead until it crashed through the outer skin of the ship and escaped into space.
Well, I'll be damned,
the laundry officer said. As Bill got up, he saw that the top of Eager's head had split open just above his ears and was held at the back by a shiny brass hinge. Inside the gaping skull, instead of brains and bones and things, was a model control room with a tiny chair, minuscule controls, TV screens, and a water cooler.
Hey,
Bill said.
Eager is just a robot, worked by the little creature that escaped in the spaceship. It looked like a chinger, but it was only 7 inches tall.
7 inches? 7 feet. What difference does it make?
Said the laundry officer.
You don't expect us to tell the recruits how small the enemy really are. We got to keep the morale up.
Suddenly, the general quarters alarm sounded, and the speakers on the ceiling grated their nasal voices throughout the ship.
Now hear this. The orders direct from the old man himself, Captain Ezekiel, that you all have been waiting to hear. We're heading into action.
They stood in first position, opposite fuse racks, eyes intent on the red bands on the fuses that were called the fuse bands. through the soles of his boots, Bill could feel a faint, distant tremor in the deck.
What's that?
He asked a trooper called Tembo out of the corner of his mouth.
Atomic engines. Means we must be maneuvering, doing something. But what?
All the remaining fuses seemed to have shorted at once, and the screaming bolt of crackling electricity crashed the length of the room. In its eye-piercing light, and in a single eternal moment, Bill saw the flames sear through the ranks of the fuse tenders, throwing them about and incinerating them like particles of dust in an open fire. By chance, a mere accident, Bill was holding the solid bulk of the fuse before him when the flame struck. It washed over his left arm, which was on the outside of the fuse, and hurled its flaming weight against the thick cylinder. The force hit Bill and rolled him end over end, flat on the floor, while the all-destroying sheet of fire crackled inches above his head. Bill crawled painfully for the hatchway, and nothing else moved down the blackened and twisted length of the fuse room. He crawled on, over a sill, through a passageway. The compartment was familiar, yet unfamiliar. He blinked at it, trying to understand why. It was long and narrow, with a curved wall that had the butt ends of immense guns projecting from it. The main battery, of course, the guns Chinger spy Eager Beager had photographed. Bill slid into the gunner's seat and stared with unseeing eyes at the screen before him. Little moving blobs of light. In large letters, just above the screen, was printed,
"Green lights, our ships. Red light, enemy."
Bill started to slide sideways from the chair. To steady himself, he grabbed a large handle that rose before him. And when he did, a circle of light with an X in it moved on the screen. He jiggled it a bit, and it moved over to a red light, with the X right over the light. There was a red button on top of the handle, and he pressed it, because it looked like the kind of button that is made to be pressed. The gun next to him went,
"Ding, ding, ding,"
in a very subdued way, and the red light went out. Not very interesting. He let go of the handle.
"Oh, but you are a fighting fool,"
a voice said, and with some effort, Bill turned his head. A man stood there, with shreds of gold braid.
"A hero,"
the officer said, pounding Bill on the back. This caused a great deal of pain, and Bill passed out.
"I'm taking the bandage off now."
Bill managed to heave his eyes open and saw before him a doctor who unclipped the wires that held up his arm and began to unwind the bandages.
"How is my arm, Doc?"
Bill was suddenly worried.
"Grilled like a chop. I had to cut it off."
"Then what is this?"
Bill shrieked, horrified.
"Another arm that I sewed on. There were lots of them left over after the battle."
The last bandage fell away, and the doctor awed with delight.
"Say, that's a mighty fine arm."
It really wasn't a bad arm. Bill bent it and flexed the fingers, still looking at it suspiciously. It felt all right. Then he looked closer at the hand and began to shout curses at the doctor.
"You stupid sawbones! You thought, doctor! This is a right arm!"
"So it's a right arm, so what?"
"But you cut off my left arm! I have two right arms!"
"Listen, there's a shortage of left arms. I'm no miracle worker. Be happy I didn't sew on a leg. And you're lucky, trooper. Captain Zekiel says that upon dismissal from the hospital, you are to go to the Imperial planet of Helior to receive the Hero's Award of the Purple Dart with Kolzak Nebula Cluster from the Emperor's own hand."
The door closed, and Bill was alone, looking at the blank wall and his future. He wished he could talk to some of his old buddies, then remembered that they were all dead, and his spirits dropped. He tried to cheer himself up, but could think of nothing to be cheery about, until he discovered that he could shake hands with himself. This made him feel a little better. He lay back on the pillows and shook hands with himself until he fell asleep. There were seats for 20 in the stubby shuttle ship, but only 3 of them, including Bill's, were now occupied. Sitting next to him, and he tried hard not to look too often, was a gunner first class who looked as though he had been blown out of one of his own guns. His face was mostly plastic and contained just a single bloodshot eye. he was a mobile basket case. His four missing limbs had been replaced by glistening gadgetry. The third man, a thick-set brute of an infantry sergeant, had fallen asleep as soon as they boarded.
Bobbity Bob, look at that!
Bill elated, as the ship broke through the clouds, and there, spread before them, was the gleaming golden sphere of Helior, the imperial planet, the ruling world of 10,000 suns. The gleaming upper level was dotted with spaceships of all sizes, while the dark sky twinkled with others arriving and departing. Closer and closer swam the scene. Then there was a sudden burst of light, and the window went dark.
We crashed! Bill gasped. Good as dead!
Oh, shut your wug, said the gunner. That was just the film that broke.
Film?
What else? You think they're gonna build shuttle ships with great big windows in the nose, just where the maximum friction on re-entry will burn holes in them? It was a film. Back projection. For all we know, it's nighttime here.
Not only was it night when they landed, but it was raining, too. They were soaking wet in an instant and chilled by the icy wind. They shouldered their bags, except for the gunner who dragged his on little wheels, and walked and rolled into the welcome warmth of the operations office. A clerk was seated behind the desk.
You're in trouble,
he said with sadistic relish.
All three of you are supposed to get the purple dart in the ceremony with the Emperor, and they're filming in 3 hours. You'll never make it in time.
None of your bob, the sergeant grated. We just got off the ship. Where do we go?
Area 1257D, level K9, block 823-7, room 62. Ask for producer Rat.
How do we get there? Bill asked.
Don't ask me. I just work here.
The clerk threw 3 thick volumes onto the counter, each one over a foot square and almost as thick, with a chain riveted to the spine.
Find your own way. Here's your floor plan.
It took them an hour, by slideway, escalator, pneumocar, Shanks's pony, monorail, and greased pole to reach room 62. And while they were seated on the slideway, they secured the chains of their floor plans to their belts, since even Bill was beginning to realize the value of a guide to this world-sized city. At room 62, the sergeant pushed the door open to reveal an immense soundstage, humming with organized bustle. Cameras on motorized dollies rolled around the set, where flats and props simulated the end of a regal throne room. The stained glass windows glowed with imaginary sunlight, and a golden sunbeam from a spotlight illuminated the throne. Goaded on by the director's screamed instructions, the crowd of nobility and high-ranking officers took positions before the throne.
He called them nobles bobs, Bill gasped. He'll be shot.
Are you ever stupid?
The gunner said.
Those are all actors. You think they can get real nobility for a thing like this?
They rehearsed the ceremony twice before there was a tremendous braying of bugles, and all the extras, cameramen and technicians, even director Rath, bowed low. The Emperor shuffled in, climbed the dais, and dropped into the throne.
Let's roll!
The director howled at the top of his lungs and staggered out of camera range. Music rose up in a mighty wave, and the ceremony began. The infantry sergeant was first, and Bill watched out of the corners of his eyes while the Emperor pinned a gold and ruby medal to the man's chest. The gunner was next, and then it was Bill's turn. Passion welled in Bill's bosom like great breakers thundering onto his shore. He snapped his snappiest salute. In fact, he snapped just about the snappiest salute possible, since there aren't that many people with 2 right arms. The Emperor, a little disturbed by the unusual salute, groped for the medal and plunged the pin through Bill's tunic squarely into his shivering flesh. Bill felt no pain, but the sudden stab triggered the growing emotion that had been rushing through him. Dropping the salute, he fell to his knees and seized the Emperor's knob-knurled and liver-spotted hand.
Father to us all!
Bill exulted and kissed the hand.
Cut!
Director Rat shouted.
Print that! It's unnatural with that dumb hick going through the slobbering act!
As Bill struggled to his feet, he saw that the Emperor had not returned to the throne, but was instead standing in the midst of a milling crowd of actors. Bill blinked, bewildered. as a man whipped the Emperor's crown from his head, tossed it into a box, and hurried away with it.
Ah, here you are,
a man said. He handed Bill a stamped metal copy of the medal he was wearing and whipped off the original. Then the heroes were pushed into the corridor, and the door slammed and locked behind them. His companions now returned to their quarters at the Transit Rankers Center, but Bill was determined to see the wonders of Helior and make the most of his 3-day pass. The sandwiches he had brought from a dispenser ran out before he was halfway to his destination, but by only eating candy bars and drinking carbonated beverages from the dispensers along his route, he kept himself awake and avoided missing connections. With black bags under his eyes and teeth rotting in his head, he stumbled from a grav shaft and with thudding heart finally saw a florally decorated and illuminated scent sign that said, Hanging Gardens. They were everything he had ever dreamed of and more. As he walked down the gray cinder path inside the outer wall, he could see green shrubs and grass just on the other side of the titanium mesh fence. And there, tiny in the distance, were the rainbow fountains, almost visible to the naked eye. But even the heady pleasures of the gardens waned in the face of the soul-consuming fatigue that gripped him in iron hands. There were steel benches pegged to the wall, and he dropped into one to rest for a moment. And before he realized it, Bill was sound asleep. Other visitors scrunched by on the cinders without disturbing him, nor did he move when one sat down on the bench and whipped an atomic arc pencil from his pocket. The small, incredibly hot flame whispered briefly as it severed the chain that secured Bill's floor plan to his waist. Then the thief rose, plucked Bill's floor plan from his lap, and strode quickly away. Bill swam slowly up out of his sleep, thick-headed, with the feeling that something was wrong. The book was gone. Retracing his steps to the entrance, he knocked on the cashier's window.
No refunds,
the robot said.
All I want to know is where the nearest police station is.
I am a cashier robot, not an information robot. That information is not in my memory. I suggest you consult your floor plan.
But it's my floor plan that has been stolen.
I suggest you talk to the police.
But...
Bill turned red and kicked the cashier's box angrily.
No refunds,
it said as he stalked away. Now what? He could barely find his way around this place with the plan. How could he do it without one? Through red-rimmed eyes, Bill blinked at the sign. Transit Rankers Center, it said. He had done it. He had only overstayed his leave by 8 days, and that couldn't matter too much. He dusted his scruffy uniform, then dragged his feet to the orderly room. The first sergeant was at his desk. He rolled his eyes towards Bill and scowled.
You're in bad trouble, trooper, coming into the orderly room out of uniform like that.
I'm in worse trouble than you think, Sarge,
Bill said, leaning weakly on the desk. The sergeant stared at Bill's mismatched hands, his eyes flickering back and forth quickly from one to the other.
Where did you get that hand, trooper? Speak up! I know that hand.
What belonged to another trooper, and I have the arm that goes along with it, too.
Bill held the hand out for the sergeant to look at, but he was horrified when the fingers tensed into a rock-hard fist, and the fist flew forward to catch the first sergeant square on the jaw.
Sergeant!
Bill screamed, and grabbed the rebellious hand with his other, and forced it, not without a struggle, back to his side. The sergeant rose slowly, and Bill saw that he was smiling.
Thought I knew that hand. Belongs to my old buddy, Timbo. We always joke like that. You take care of that arm, you hear? Is there any more of Timbo around?
When Bill said no, the smile vanished, and the snarl reappeared.
You're in bad trouble, trooper. Let's see your ID card.
He whipped it from Bill's nerveless fingers and shoved it into a slot in the desk. The mechanism hummed and vibrated, and a screen lit up. The first sergeant read the message there, and as he did, the snarl faded from his face and was replaced by an expression of cold anger.
This card must be stolen, because first-class fuel tender Bill shipped out of here 8 days ago. That is what the record says, and records do not lie. You've had it, Bob.
He depressed a red button labeled Military Police, and an alarm bell could be heard ringing angrily in the distance.
Hold him there, Timbo.
the sergeant snapped.
I want to get to the bottom of this.
Bill's left right arm grabbed the edge of the desk, and he couldn't pry it loose. He was still struggling with it when heavy boots thudded up behind him.
What's up?
A familiar voice growled.
Oh, sir!
Bill laughed, spinning about and feasting his eyes on the long, loathed figure.
Deathwish Drang! Tell them you know me!
Deathwish squinted, rolling his eyes the length of Bill's body.
I knew a sixth-class fuse finger named Bill, but both his hands matched. Something very strange here, Sergeant. We'll rough him up a bit in the guardhouse and let you know what he confesses.
Affirm, but watch out for that left hand. It belongs to a friend of mine.
We won't lay a finger on it.
It could only have been fatigue that caused Bill to do what he did then. Fatigue, desperation, and fear combined and overpowered him, and he dived headfirst into a grav chute. As the MPs sprang in after him, the automatic sight link spaced them all out a good 15 feet apart.
Oh, buddy,
Bill sobbed.
Why are you chasing me?
Don't buddy me, you chinga spy. You're not even a good spy. Your arms don't match.
As he dropped, Deathwish pulled his gun free of the holster and aimed it squarely between Bill's eyes.
Shot while attempting to escape.
Have mercy.
Death to all chingas.
He pulled the trigger. The bullet plowed slowly out of the cloud of expanding gas and drifted about 2 feet towards Bill before the humming gravity field slowed it to a stop. The simple-minded cycling circuit translated the bullet's speed as mass and assumed that another body had entered the grav chute and assigned it a position. Deathwish's fall slowed until he was 15 feet behind the bullet. The gap between Bill and his pursuers was now twice as wide, and he took advantage of this and ducked out of the exit at the next level. After this, escape was simply a matter of muddling his trail. He used different means of transportation at random, and all the time kept fleeing to lower levels, as though seeking to escape like a mole by burrowing deep into the ground. When transport would take him no lower, he raced down stairs, ladders, and oily tubes, thinking only of escape. The air was dank and foul at times, and his fear-ridden course took him finally through a dark stone tunnel where nameless beasts fled before him with the rattle of evil claws. He stumbled down the passage until it ended in an immense sealed and bolted door. There was no way out of this. Then, while he watched, paralyzed with staring eyes, the door squealed and started to swing open. He turned to run and screamed aloud in terror as something grabbed him in an unbreakable grip.
Welcome,
a strange voice said, and Bill staggered as the restraining grasp was removed, then whirled about to face a small man in a white jacket.
I am Inspector Jace of the City Department of Sanitation. I can see you are in a bit of trouble, out of uniform. Perhaps even your ID card vanished. But it doesn't have to be that way, except Sanctuary. We will provide for you, give you a good job, and even a new ID. We have a vast selection of cards to choose from.
You mean all I have to do is become a garbage man?
Bill gasped.
We prefer the term G-Man,
Inspector Jays answered humbly.
Okay,
Bill agreed. Inspector Jays took both of Bill's hands in his, and when he looked him directly in the eyes, his own were more than a little damp.
Going to research. Did you ever think how many newspapers 150 billion people throw away every day? Or how many plastic trays from prepared meals? I daren't tell you how many cubic feet of them we have piled up. I might better say cubic miles. We are working on this problem in research, day and night, but it's a nightmare. You can help a fresh mind with fresh ideas.
I'll do it,
Bill said with determination.
Refuse research is the sort of work a man can get his teeth into.
Oh, good, said Jays. You'll never regret this.
It was a small office, but Bill was proud of it. He closed the door and admired the files, the desk, the swivel chair, and the lamp, all made from a variety of discarded bottles, cans, boxes, casters, coasters, and such. But there would be plenty of time to appreciate it. Now he had to get to work. He hauled open the top drawer in the file cabinet and stared at a black-clothed, matte-bearded, pasty-faced corpse that was jammed in there. Then the corpse opened beady, gummy eyes and stared at him intensely.
What are you doing in my file cabinet?
Bill asked as the man climbed down.
I had to see you, privately.
Who are you?
Men call me Axe.
Axe?
You're catching on. You're the kind of man we need in the party. A man with promise.
What party?
Don't ask too many questions or you'll be in trouble. You hate the Emperor who enslaved you in his fascist army. You're ready to join the revolt, the glorious revolution that will free...
Out!
Bill shrieked, clutching him by the slack of his clothes and rushing him towards the door. X slipped out of his grasp and rushed behind the desk.
I shall return.
When Bill dived for him, X did something to the wall, and a panel swung open that he vanished through. It swung shut with a click, and when Bill looked closely, he could find no seam in the apparently solid surface. He decided to forget this encounter, so he threw himself into his labors. He was concentrating so hard that he never heard the door open and was startled when a man spoke.
How come you didn't join the revolution?
Bill looked up and saw a ruddy face peering over a gun.
What are you talking about? I'm a loyal emperor lover.
Yeah? Then how come you didn't report to the GBI that a man called X was here to enlist you?
Well, how do you know that?
It's our job to know everything. Here's my identification. Agent Pinkerton of the Galactic Bureau of Investigation.
He passed over a jewel-encrusted ID card with color photograph.
Are you an anarchist, boy?
His rapier eye pierced Bill through and through.
No, I can't even spell it.
I sure hope not. You're a good kid, and I'm gonna give you a second chance. When you see X again, tell him you changed your mind and you wanna join the party. Then you go to work for us. And when something happens, call me on the phone. My number is written on this candy bar.
He threw the paper-wrapped slab on the desk.
Memorize it. Then eat it.
The door slammed, and the man was gone. The more Bill thought about it, the more he sweated. The last thing he wanted to do was to get mixed up in a revolution. But there was still a chance that X would not come back, and as long as he wasn't asked, he couldn't join, could he? He grasped at this straw and hurled himself into his work to forget his troubles. He came up with an idea almost at once. It took him less than an hour to gather together the material he needed, and then he went to Inspector Jay's office.
You can forget your troubles. I found a new way to get rid of the plastic trays.
Jay's lurched to his feet.
What is it?
He asked hoarsely.
Do you know what this is?
Bill asked, throwing a thick volume onto the desk.
The classified telephone directory for the city of Storhefthalorkby on Procyon 3. So what?
So I'll show you. Do you have any plastic trays?
Are you kidding?
Jay's threw open a closet, and hundreds of trays clattered forward into the room.
Great. Now, I add just a few things more, salvaged from the refuse dump, and we have everything we need.
Bill pointed at Jay's secretary robot.
To work, robot. Take 50 of those trays, wrap them in cardboard and paper, and tie them securely with a string.
The robot pounced forward, and a moment later, a neat package rested on the floor. Bill opened the telephone book at random and pointed to a name.
Now, address this package to this name. Mark it unsolicited gift, duty free, and mail it.
The robot quickly copied the address onto the package and flipped it neatly through the door of the mail chute. Bill clinched the argument.
The robot labor for wrapping is free. The addresses are free, and so are the wrapping materials. Plus the fact that since this is a government office, the postage is free.
You're right. It'll work. We'll flood the inhabited galaxy with these damn trays.
Bill strolled back to his office, his ears still ringing with the words of praise. He slammed his office door behind him and seated himself at his desk. Then he noticed the eyes staring at him, and his heart sank as he realized that X had returned.
Change your mind yet about joining the party?
X asked.
I've been doing some thinking.
To think is to act. We must drive the stench of the fascist leeches from the nostrils of our homes and loved ones.
You talk me into it. I'll join.
Sign the form here. A drop of blood there. Then raise your hand while I administer the secret oath.
Bill raised his hand, and X's lips worked silently.
I can't hear you, Bill said.
I told you it was a secret oath. All you do is say yes.
Yes.
Welcome to the glorious revolution.
X kissed him warmly on both cheeks.
Now come with me. It is about to begin.
X rushed to the rear wall. There was a click, and the secret panel swung open. Bill looked in dubiously at the damp, dark staircase leading down.
Follow me.
There were torches in a niche in the wall, and X lit one and led the way through the dank and noisome darkness. Bill stayed close, stumbling over rusting rails in one tunnel, and in another, wading through dark water that reached above his knees. Then X pushed Bill through a door into a large, torch-lit room. Bill took one wild-eyed look around and tried to leave, but a dead white and hairless android was blocking the door.
Sit down,
it said, and Bill sat. He sat among as gruesome a collection of nuts, bolts, and weirdies as had ever been assembled. Revolutionary men with black hats and small round bombs with long fuses, and revolutionary women with short skirts, long hair, cigarette holders, and halitosis. There were revolutionary robots, androids, and a number of strange things that are best not described. X sat behind a wooden kitchen table, hammering on it with the handle of a revolver.
Order! I demand order!
Then he pointed with the barrel of his gun at a large map hung on the wall.
This is the objective of our cell, the Imperial Power Station on Chauvinistic Square. We will assemble nearby in squads, then join in a concerted attack at 0016 hours. Weapons and torches will be issued as you leave, as well as printed instructions of the correct route. Up the revolution!
Bill pocketed his printed instructions, shouldered his torch and flintlock ray gun, and hurried through the secret passages. There was barely enough time for the long trip ahead of him, and he had to report to the GBI first. He dialed the number and sighed with relief when Pinkerton's surly features filled the tiny screen.
What's up?
The revolution is to start at 0016 hours. I thought you might like to know.
Pinkerton yawned.
Oh, is that all? For your information, that information is old information. You're not the only spy we've got, though you might be the worst. Now listen, your cell is to attack the Imperial Power Station. Stay with them as far as the square. Then look for a store with the sign Quick Freeze Kosher Hams Limited. That is the cover for our unit. Get over there fast and report to me. Understood?
Affirm.
The line went dead, and Bill had to hurry. There was little time left before 0 hour, and a long distance to cover by a very complicated route.
You were almost late,
said the dead white and hairless android, when Bill stumbled into the dead-end corridor, which was the assembly point. A moment later, Bill jumped as a shrill blast sounded. And then they were sweeping up the alley in a human and inhuman wave. This was revolution! Bill was carried away by the emotion and rush of bodies and cheered as loudly as the rest as they swept into the immense square that fronted on the power plant. An electric sign blinking on and off drew Bill's attention. Quick Freeze Kosher Hams Limited, it read. And he gasped as memory returned. He had forgotten that he was a spy for the GBI and had been about to join a raid on the power station.
Get over here, you stupid bob!
A voice called, and he looked up to see the GBI agent Pinkerton standing at the corner of the building and beckoning to him angrily. Bill followed the agent around the corner of the building and found quite a crowd standing there. A number of heavily armed soldiers and GBI agents, as well as an even larger number of revolutionaries. Standing next to Bill was the dead white and hairless android.
You!
Bill gasped.
That's right. And keeping an eye on you for the GBI. Nothing is left to chance in this organization.
Pinkerton was peeking out through a hole in the false storefront.
Well, I think the agents are clear now,
he said.
At last count, there were 65 agencies involved in investigating this operation. These revolutionaries don't stand a chance.
The soldiers moved out into the square, but it was empty. Well, not really empty. Bill looked again and saw that one man was left in the square. He was running their way, but stopped with a pitiful screech when he saw the soldiers.
I surrender,
he squeaked, and Bill saw that he was a man called X. The power plant gates opened, and a squadron of flamethrower tanks rumbled out. Pinkerton shouted,
What fire!
And from all sides washed a wave of atomic shells, gouts of flame, bullets, and grenades. Bill hit the dirt, and when he raised his head, the square was empty, except for a greasy patch and a shallow hole in the pavement. Even while he watched, a street-cleaning robot buzzed by and swabbed up the grease.
Hello, Bill,
a voice said. He spun and looked at the squad of MPs that were standing there, and especially he stared at the large, loathsome form of the MP who led them.
Death wish drying, he breathed.
The same.
Save me!
Bill gasped, running to the GBI agent Pinkerton.
Save you?
Pinkerton laughed.
I'm the one who called them. We checked your record, boy, and found out that you have been AWOL. We don't want any deserters on our team.
Oh!
Bill moaned as the hated fingers sank into his arms again, and Deathwish dragged him away. Bill was sentenced to 104 years and one day's hard labor on the planet of Veniola, a fog-shrouded world of untold horrors, creeping in its orbit around the ghoulish green star Hernia. Veniola, swamp world, the lair of the hideous and unimaginable Venians. It was hot, and it was damp. And it stank. The wood of the newly constructed barracks was already soft and rotting away. You took your shoes off, and before they hit the floor, fungus was growing out of them. Once inside the compound, Bill's chains were removed, since there was no place for labor camp prisoners to escape to, and Bill dropped down onto the nearest bunk. Instantly, a vine flashed up from a crack in the floor, whipped four times around the bunk, lashing him securely to it, then plunged tendrils into his leg and began to drink his blood. Bill croaked as a green loop tightened around his throat.
Never lie down without you got a knife in your hand,
a thin yellowish sergeant said as he passed by and severed the vine with his own knife where it emerged from the floorboards.
Oh, thanks, Sarge,
Bill said.
It's kind of rough here.
Rough is not the word for it. Fighting the Chingers is bad enough, but on this planet they have the natives, the Venians, on their side. Oh, these Venians look like moldy newts, and they got just maybe enough IQ to hold a gun and pull the trigger. But it is their planet, and they are murder out there in the swamps.
How do you get out of this outfit?
Huh? You get killed.
What about getting wounded?
Get sent to hospital, get well, get sent back here.
Couldn't we mutiny?
It didn't work the last four times we tried it. They just pulled the supply ships out and didn't give us any food until we agreed to start fighting again. Wrong chemistry here. All the food on this planet is pure poison for our metabolisms. If you got any good ideas, though, I'll put you in touch with the Permanent Mutiny Committee.
Isn't there any other way to get out?
Suddenly, all the lights went out. At the same time, gunfire and bomb explosions broke out on every side. Something slithered close by. Bill grabbed the sergeant's gun, and he shot it. In the brief atomic flare, he saw the smoking remains of a dead Venian, as well as a large number of live Venians squelching to the attack. Bill dived aside instantly, so that their return fire missed him, and fled as far from the firing of the attacking enemy as he could. This direction happened to be into the trackless swamp he did not consider. He ran and ran until he was exhausted. He dropped onto a mud bank. And instantly, sharp teeth sank deep into his buttocks. Screaming hoarsely, he ran to a tree and climbed. High up, there were two branches that forked out from the trunk, and he wedged himself into the crotch, gun at the ready, and slept. It was the first gray light of dawn when he opened his gummy eyes and blinked around. There was a little lizard perched on a nearby branch, watching him with jewel-like eyes.
Gee, you were really sacked out,
the Chinger said. Bill's shot tore a smoking scar in the top of the branch. Then the Chinger swung back up from underneath and meticulously wiped bits of ash from his paws.
Easy on the trigger, Bill,
it said.
Gee, I could have killed you any time during the night if I'd wanted to.
I know you. You're Eager Beager, aren't you?
Gee, that's right. I recognize you, Bill, and I wanted to talk to you.
He groped about in his marsupial pouch and produced a tablet and tiny writing instrument.
You must realize that spying is not my chosen occupation, but rather I was dragooned into it through my speciality, which is exopology, the study of alien life forms. Seeing you here reminded me that there are a number of questions and problems still unanswered that I would appreciate your help on, purely as a matter of science, of course.
Like what?
Bill asked suspiciously.
Well, gee, to begin simply, how do you feel about us Chingers?
Death to all Chingers.
The little pen flew over the tablet.
Yeah, but you've been taught to say that. How did you feel before you entered the service?
Well, I didn't give a damn about Chingers.
Out of the corner of his eye, Bill was watching a suspicious movement of the leaves in the tree above.
Fine. Then who is it that hates us Chingers and wants to fight a war of extermination?
Well, nobody really hates Chingers, I guess. It's just that there's no one else around to fight a war with, so we fight with you.
The moving leaves had parted, and a great smooth head with slitted eyes peered down.
I knew it! And that brings me to my really important question. Why do you Homo sapiens fight wars?
Fight wars? I don't know,
Bill said, distracted by the soundless approach of the giant snake.
I guess because we like to.
You like to? No civilized race could like wars. Your race can't be civilized.
The snake struck like lightning, and Eager Beager Chinger vanished down its spine-covered throat with only the slightest of muffled squeals.
Yeah, I guess we're just not civilized,
Bill said, gun ready, but the snake kept on going down. At least 50 yards of it slithered by before the tail flipped past, and it was out of sight.
Serves the damn spy right,
Bill grunted happily, and pulled himself to his feet. He was about to climb down when he heard voices coming through the jungle towards him. Human voices. Then figures loomed out of the fog. It was a long file of human prisoners wearing the neck irons used to bring Bill and the others to the labor camps, all joined together by a long chain that connected the neck irons. Bill let them stumble by underneath and kept a careful count of the Venian guards. There were five in all, with a sixth bringing up the rear, and when this one had passed underneath the tree, Bill dropped straight down on him, braining him with his heavy boots. Then he ran as fast as he could towards the head of the column, shouting as he ran,
"Hit the dirt! Fast!"
The soldiers dived into the mud, and Bill held his automatic rifle at his waist, fanning it back and forth before him like a water hose and holding down the trigger on full automatic. One guard got off a single badly aimed shot before Bill burned them all.
"Not bad,"
he said, stopping and panting.
"Six out of six."
There were low moans coming from the line of prisoners, and Bill curled his lip in disgust at the two men who hadn't dropped at his shouted command.
"What's the matter?"
he asked, stirring one with his foot.
"Never been in combat before?"
But this one didn't answer, because he was charred dead. He walked across to the other.
"Hello, Bill,"
a weak voice said.
"I guess the old reflexes are slowing down. I should have hit the dirt like the others."
"You're damn right you should have,"
Bill said, looking down at the familiar, loathed face.
"You're dying, Deathwish. You've bought it."
"I know,"
Deathwish said.
"So long, Bill."
"Wrap this line up in a circle,"
Bill shouted.
"I want the medic up here."
The chain of prisoners curved around, and they watched as the medic examined Deathwish.
"Dead as a herring,"
he said, after his professional examination. Bill grunted, then squatted down next to the medic.
I hear they aren't shipping any wounded out, just putting them back into shape and sending them back into the line."
"You heard right. This is going to be a hard war to live through."
"But some of them must be wounded too badly, maybe a guy gets his arm blown off."
"Nah, they got an icebox full of old arms. So on a new one, and bingo, right back into the line.
Well, what about a foot?
Ah, that's right, I forgot. They got a foot shortage. So many guys lying around without feet that they're running out of bed space. They were just starting to ship some of them off the planet when I left.
You got any pain pills?
Bill asked, changing the subject. The medic dug out a white bottle.
Three of these, and you'd laugh while they sawed your head off.
Give me three. And now we better get moving. The quicker we move, the better our chances of getting back to barracks.
Bill led the way until the first men could see the compound ahead. Then he called out,
"What's that?"
and ran into the heavy foliage.
"Chingers!"
he shouted, and sat down with his back to a tree and tied a tourniquet above his right knee. Then he took careful aim with his pistol and blew his right foot off.
"Oh, get moving fast!"
he shouted, and heard the crash of the frightened men through the undergrowth. Then he dragged to his foot. The automatic rifle made a good enough crutch to hobble along on, and he did not have far to go. Two troopers, they must have been new to combat, or they would have known better, left the shelter to help him inside.
"Oh, thanks, buddies,"
he gasped, and sank to the ground.
"War sure is hell."
Martial music echoed from the hillside, and around the bend, stamping proudly through the dust, came the magnificent form of a one robot band. A small formation of assorted robots rolled and clattered in its wake, and bringing up the rear was the solitary figure of the grizzle-haired recruiting sergeant, striding along strongly, his rows of medals a-jingle. Though the road was smooth, the sergeant lurched suddenly, stumbling, and cursed with the rich proficiency of years.
"Halt!"
he commanded. And while his little company braked to a stop, he took a large spanner and tightened one of the bolts in the ankle of his artificial foot. When he straightened up, he noticed that a robo-mule was pulling a plow down a furrow in the field beyond the fence, while a husky farm lad guided it. By the time the furrow reached the limits of the field, there were two dew-frosted steins of beer resting on the fence.
"Join me in a beer,"
the sergeant said, sprinkling a white powder into it from a packet concealed in his hand.
"Thanks for the offer, but I gotta be plowing on now. Mama said I was never to talk to soldiers."
"Your mama's right. A dirty, cursing, drinking crew, the most of them. Say, would you like to see a picture here of the new model robo-mule that can run 1,000 hours without lubrication?"
The sergeant held his hand out behind him, and a robot put a viewer into it.
"Why, that sounds nice."
The farm lad raised the viewer to his eyes and looked into it. The sergeant reached out swiftly and pressed a button on the top of the viewer. Something went inside of it, and the farmer stood, rigid and frozen. He did not move or change expression when the sergeant reached out and took the little machine from his paralyzed fingers.
"Take this stylo,"
the sergeant said, and the other's fingers closed on it.
"Now sign this form, right down there where it says recruit signature."
The stylo scratched, and the air was pierced by a sudden scream.
"Ah! My Charlie! What are you doing with my Charlie?"
an ancient gray-haired woman wailed as she scrambled down the hill.
"Your son is now a trooper for the greater glory of the Emperor,"
the sergeant said, and waved over the robot tailor.
"No, no, please,"
the woman begged, clutching the sergeant's hand and dribbling tears onto it.
"I've lost one son. Isn't that enough?"
She blinked up through the tears, then blinked again.
But you're my boy. My Bill's come home. Even with those scars and two right hands and one artificial foot, I can tell. Mother always knows."
The sergeant frowned down at the woman.
"I believe you may be right," he said. "I thought the name Figurinodon too sounded familiar."
The robot tailor had finished his job. The red paper jacket shone bravely in the sun. The one molecule thick boots gleamed.
"Fall in,"
Bill shouted, and the recruit climbed over the wall.
"Ah, Billy! Billy!"
the woman wailed.
"This is your own little brother, Charlie! You wouldn't take your own little brother into the troopers now, would you?"
Bill thought about his mother. Then he thought of the 1 month that would be taken off his enlistment time for every recruit he brought in.
"You bet I would," he said.
The music blared, the soldiers marched, The mother cried, as mothers have always done, and the brave little band tramped down the road and over the hill and out of sight into the sunset.